For decades, the patriots of Eastern Europe fought against communism. Despite the threat of imprisonment and near total censorship, they continued to speak out. They called themselves dissidents. Ultimately, they prevailed against tremendous odds. Now, at long last, American patriots are speaking out against the forces that are destroying this country. This program is the voice of those patriots. This is American Dissident Voices. Your host is Kevin Alfred Strong.
Thank you, Richard Cotton. Today, we continue our series entitled The History and Significance of the New World Order. Today's program is part 4 in this series, written by researcher and writer Scott Spencer of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. On our last program, we observed that many of the leading personalities of the French Revolution were Jews, and that Jewish Kabbalism and Freemasonry were used by the Jews, much as the New Age cults are used today, to cloud the minds and direct the thinking of their Gentile recruits in directions desired by organized Jewish interests. Today, we will conclude our look at the French Revolution and explore abolitionism and communism as they relate to today's New World Order. Let us begin. There arose in Europe around this time many secret societies, including the so-called ancient and accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, which is neither ancient nor Scottish, but based on Jewish Kabbalism. The name Scottish Rite was apparently adopted so as to make people confuse this group with the partisans of the deposed Stuart dynasty, who also resided in France. In 1761, a Jew named Stephen Morin brought the so-called Scottish Rite to America. The Scottish Rite was established in Charleston, South Carolina, under the direction of Isaac da Costa, also a Jew, in 1783. At about the same time, several other lodges were established in North America, all of them under Jewish direction. Stephen Morin's deputy inspector, Henry Franken, appointed Moses M. Hayes to be the master of masonry in Boston, B.M. Spitzer in Georgia, and Solomon Bush in Pennsylvania. With Illuminism and Freemasonry, the Jews had essentially resumed the ancient Jewish practice of multiplying their own power by proselytizing Gentiles. The Jews were recognized as subversives in the ancient world. The Jews fomented riots, and on this account, Judaism was occasionally suppressed at Rome, most notably by the emperors Tiberius and Claudius. By converting Gentiles to Judaism, however, the Jews discovered a means whereby they could extend Jewish influence. For example, the second wife of Nero was a convert to Judaism. Finally, in the aftermath of the Jewish War, Rome made it illegal for Jews to proselytize. Since then, the Jews have found various masks for Jewish proselytism. Illuminism, which was part of the Jewish Reformation, is certainly a case in point. Adam Weishaupt's Order of the Illuminati was not the first such organization. There were several Illuminist sects before Weishaupt, all based on Jewish Kabbalism, especially as presented in the Zohar, or Book of Light, the most important text of Kabbalism, which was compiled by Moses de Leon in the late 13th century. Jewish writer Max Demont states in Jews, God, and History that there was an addition to Kabbalism in the 16th century, which has significant implications. Quote, "A new metaphysical philosophy was injected into Kabbalism in the 16th century by one of the great Kabbalistic scholars, Isaac Luria, 1534 to 1572, known as Ari, the Lion. Luria held that all matter and thought evolved through a three-stage cycle, Tzimtzum, literally contraction or thesis, Shevirat Hakelim, literally breaking of the vessels or antithesis, and Tikkun, literally restoration or synthesis, close quote. That last Hebrew term, Tikkun, you have heard before. It is the name of Rabbi Michael Lerner's Jewish magazine. It was Rabbi Lerner who was the spiritual advisor of First Lady Hillary Clinton. It was Rabbi Lerner who put the words politics of meaning into her mouth. The very name of Rabbi Lerner's magazine, Tikkun, proclaims the lineage of his ideas. Illumination is an important term in Jewish Kabbalism, hence the series of Jewish-led organizations calling themselves Illuminati or Illuminated. Before Adam Weishaupt, there was Jacob Frank, leader of the Frankists, who also called themselves the Illuminated. This group was part of what is called the Jewish Reformation, which also includes Hasidic Judaism. Norman F. Cantor states in The Sacred Chain, The History of the Jews, the following, quote, "Central to Frank's doctrine, and practiced by him and some of his followers, was the legitimacy of sexual promiscuity based on the assumption, from Kabbalistic derivation, that sexual activity was a form of cosmic healing, unifying the spiritual and material realms," close quote. The free love advocated and practiced by Jacob Frank and his ilk was echoed in the French Revolution, in the Bolshevik Revolution, among the radical abolitionists of the American Civil War era, and in the hippie movement of the 1960s. Many patriot commentators, mostly because they are afraid to say the J word, try to argue that the Illuminati and the Jews are two completely separate affairs. But once we understand that Illuminism is really another word for Kabbalism, it becomes clear that Illuminism itself is a branch of Judaism. Also, be it noted that the Jews themselves are not fooled by this pretended distinction. Their publications state quite correctly that those who condemn the Illuminati are really condemning the Jews, whether they realize it or not. It is customary among patriot commentators eager to stay marginally on the Jews' good side to point to some Gentile stooge as an excuse to avoid implicating the Jews. The so-called Jewish patriots can also be counted on to do this. The fact that these essentially Jewish organizations strove to ensnare some Gentile stooges is not at all surprising in light of Isaiah 61, which states, quote, "Aliens shall stand and feed your flocks. Foreigners shall be your plowmen and vine dressers. But you shall be called the priests of the Lord. Men shall speak of you as the ministers of our God. You shall eat the wealth of nations, and in their riches you shall glory." Close quote. Recruitment of Gentile stooges is a very ancient element of Judaism. In ancient Rome, the Gentile converts to Judaism were known as metuentes, and even the Roman authorities, without the benefit of hindsight, recognized that this Jewish proselytism was subversive, insofar as this unruly people was recruiting minions for its own cause. It is therefore not surprising that the Jewish Kabbalists recruited some Gentiles to be their plowmen and vine dressers, or some equivalent thereof. Adam Weishaupt is the most well-known of the Illuminists, simply because it was he and his organization which were exposed and crushed by the Elector of Bavaria. It is controversial as to whether Adam Weishaupt was a Jew or was merely a capable Gentile stooge. Winston Churchill apparently believed that Weishaupt was a Jew, for in his essay, Zionism versus Bolshevism, A Struggle for the Soul of the Jewish People, Churchill wrote, quote, "From the days of Spartacus Weishaupt, etc." In any event, the Jewish writer Bernard Lazar stated that, quote, "There were Jews, Kabbalistic Jews, around Weishaupt," close quote. It is not without some trepidation that I have set out to discuss these obscure conspiratorial aspects of the New World Order. It is a subject on which our enemies do not mind having patriots focus, because the very obscurity of the subject makes misrepresentation so easy, and because the distance of such conspiracy from everyday life suggests nothing that an ordinary person can do. Some people who call themselves patriots have become so wrapped up in fantasies about the Illuminati that even the most obvious facts have escaped their notice. The fact, for example, that multiracialism is the centerpiece of the New World Order, that the New World Order is, above all, anti-white, a destruction of whatever power white men have in the world. On the local level, there is much that one can do to brace first oneself and then others from this process. Above all, one must have the attitude that one's race must survive, and recognize the insidious and the obvious ways in which our race is under attack. From this consciousness, all else follows. Lest the power of these secret societies be overstated, I want to emphasize that in spite of all the cunning and chicanery of the Jews and their secret societies of Gentile stooges, they would never have been able to overthrow, for example, King Louis XVI, had he not allowed himself to be overthrown. That may seem at first a peculiar thing to say, that Louis XVI allowed himself to be overthrown, allowed his kingdom to be ruined, and subjected himself and many others to the whim of those filthy degenerates. But the fact is that Louis XVI was a liberal. Much like the liberals we encounter today, the ones who are soft on crime and would just as soon turn all the Willie Hortons free. Yes, Louis XVI of France was a liberal, and like all liberals, he was an enemy to his friends and a friend to his enemies. Writer and researcher Nesta Webster makes it clear that the entire French Revolution could have been stifled on several occasions if only the king had allowed his bodyguards and his troops to deal with the gangs of hired ruffians in the manner they so richly deserved. But no, for Louis was an humanitarian. So much so that in the siege of the Tuileries, the king's own Swiss guards were brutally murdered simply because he had forbidden them to raise their weapons, even in self-defense, against those hired thugs whom the king naively regarded as the people. Louis was not a congenitally stupid man, but from childhood his head had been filled with wrong ideas, the same kinds of wrong ideas which public schools and mass media impress upon us and our children today. The fate of Louis XVI should be a cautionary tale to all of us about the deadliness of certain wrong ideas. These particular wrong ideas, such as the Brotherhood of Man, for example, are highly infectious because they appeal to the self-indulgent tendency toward wishful thinking. It is soothing, and it is pleasant to think that violence, conflict, and death are mere vestiges of an unenlightened past, and that all unpleasantness can be avoided simply by being nice to everyone. Ever since the days of Louis XVI, this mode of thinking has been a deadly form of self-indulgence. Louis XVI had far more armed forces than were needed to crush the revolution, but he chose not to crush it, and slightly over 1 million Frenchmen were murdered as a result, as a consequence of his humanitarianism. So much for Jewish agitation against the old order in France. Now let us consider abolitionism. Arguably, the most destructive movement in American history was radical abolitionism. This movement was comprised of a tiny minority of lunatics and degenerates who somehow made enough noise that they succeeded in having America's racial identity officially destroyed. Few of those involved were Jews themselves, but they represent an extreme example of the Jewish ideals of universal human equality, which have been continuously vended to the gullible since their day. The general character of the abolitionists is suggested by a memoir of Henry B. Stanton, who attended a convention of abolitionists in Boston. Quote, "There was a representative array on the front seats near the platform. First was William Lloyd Garrison, his countenance calling to mind the pictures of the prophet Isaiah in a rapt mood. Next was the fine Roman head of Wendell Phillips. At his right was Father Lampson, so-called, a crazy loon, his hair and flowing beard as white as the driven snow. He was the inventor of the valuable scythe snath, and invariably carried a snath in his hand. His forte was selling his wares on secular days and disturbing religious meetings on Sunday. Next to Lampson sat Edmund Quincy, highborn and wealthy, the son of the famous President Quincy of Harvard. Next to Quincy was Abigail Folsom, another lunatic, with a shock of unkempt hair reaching down to her waist. At her right was George W. Mellon, clad in the military costume of the Revolution and fancying himself to be General Washington because he was named after him. Poor Mellon died in an asylum." Close quote. Another prominent figure in radical abolitionism was Victoria Woodhull, who was also a feminist and a cultist and, as it turned out, a communist. Quote, "As if her time did not pass spectacularly enough, Victoria Woodhull organized an American section of the International Working Men's Association, the first communist international. In this endeavor, her chief ally was William West. Their section of the international advocated woman's suffrage and sexual freedom, as well as Stephen Pearl Andrews' pet theories of universal language and pantarchical order." Close quote. These flakes were an embarrassment even to the Marxists, who had modernized the old Illuminist agenda with pretenses of being objective and scientific. In the interests of party orthodoxy, Victoria Woodhull's section was expelled from the party when Marx relocated the center of world communism from London to New York City in 1872. In 1863, Henry C. Wright published The Self-Abnegationist, which was a reaction against the findings of Charles Darwin vis-à-vis their implications for man. Wright defined self-abnegation in these terms, quote, "Suffer rather than inflict suffering. Die rather than kill." Close quote. He further explains, quote, "Self-preservation at the expense of others is condemned by universal consciousness. Let any man, whatever be his moral or intellectual development, fully understand the meaning of self-abnegation, and then enter into the sacred and silent depths of his own soul, and he will find this to be an abiding law of his nature, to which he will find his heaven in being obedient." Close quote. Mainstream historian Lewis Perry states that there was behind radical abolitionism a religious movement called perfectionism, which is, quote, "the quest for perfect holiness and the idea that such perfection might be immediately possible." Close quote. Perry further states, quote, "Perfectionist ideas permeated the major denominations and inspired a variety of shockingly radical splinter movements. It was possible for those who deemed their personal sanctification to be perfect to attack the practices of institutional churches and hold themselves to new standards of morality. Rumors of sexual promiscuity particularly haunted the career of perfectionism in upstate New York. John Humphrey Noyes proceeded from the development of perfectionist religious theories to preach common marriage among the saints, a belief which, as practiced by Noyes and his followers at the Oneida community, was popularly referred to as free love. Though free love and the disruption of churches were of course widely condemned, it was difficult for the evangelical orthodoxy to distinguish its basic perfectionist beliefs from those of scandalous radicals. Close quote. The combination of the term perfectionism with the advocacy of sexual promiscuity is a suggestive parallel to Jewish Kabbalism. Adam Weishaupt's Order of the Illuminati was also known as the Perfectibilisten. We return to Perry, quote, "The most notorious perfectionist was John Humphrey Noyes. Noyes had been brought up as an Orthodox New Englander and educated in the New Divinity at Yale. After a meeting with abolitionist leader William Lloyd Garrison, Noyes announced that he had retracted his allegiance to the United States government and now championed the claim of Jesus Christ to the throne of the world. He depicted the government as a fat libertine flogging Negroes and torturing Indians. My hope of the millennium, he wrote, begins where Dr. Beecher's expires, at the overthrow of this nation." Close quote. James Russell Lowell, a prominent abolitionist, explicitly advocated race mixing on the grounds that mulatto offspring would be more submissive, more Christian than the white race. Quote, "We have never had any doubt that the African race was intended to introduce a new element of civilization, and that the Caucasian would be benefited greatly by an infusion of its gentler and less selfish qualities. The Caucasian mind, which always seeks to govern at whatever cost, can never come to so beautiful or Christian a height of civilization as with a mixture of those seemingly humble but truly more noble qualities which teach it to obey." Close quote. Abolitionist Henry C. Wright stated in 1857 what would become the actual agenda of the Reconstruction period. Quote, "A baptism of blood awaits the slaveholder and his abettors. So be it. The retribution is just. Must the slaveholders become the slaves of those whom they have enslaved? History answers yes. If slavery goes down in blood, the conquered will be the bondmen and bondwomen of the conquerors. For the practical teaching of church and state is that might makes the right to enslave. Bid American slaveholders beware. Their turn may come, will come, must come, to be bought and sold as brutes, and to have their wives and daughters consigned to the Negro's harem, unless they willingly and penitently let their slaves go free." Close quote. It should be noted that aside from the grotesque dream of forced miscegenation, Wright's vision is not essentially different from that of Karl Marx. It was an axiom of Marxist anarchism that workers were in fact slaves who would one day change places with their masters. You have been listening to part 4 of Scott Spencer's The History and Significance of the New World Order. We will continue this series on my next program, in which we will conclude with an overview of Jewish activities in this century, including communism, the takeover of the United States government, and the subversion of the modern patriotic movement. This important series will also appear, as do most of our American Dissident Voices broadcasts, in our monthly illustrated newsletter, Free Speech. Free Speech is the monthly publication for supporters of this truth-telling radio program, and a 12-issue, one-year subscription is yours for a donation of only $40 or more. Free speech subscribers not only receive American Dissident Voices articles in permanent, illustrated, printed form every month, but they also receive substantial discounts on books, audio cassettes, and videotapes published by National Vanguard Books. Discounts that are normally available only to book dealers. No one is doing what we are doing on the airwaves. Support our efforts and send $40 or more today to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA. International listeners may send an international postal money order or international reply coupons. Until next time, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you that the next time you look at the night sky, remember Orion. Our race is our nation.
You've been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 for a book and tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute 2 international reply coupons for the $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.